Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, you know, the news lately, the big buzz in the EB5 industry, and a lot of people have been writing about it, is this new EB5 capital redeployment guidance. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes, Mark, you have seen a lot of activity going on this last couple of weeks because I think everybody has been blogging about this. But the reason is because redeployment is such a huge issue in EB5. Capital redeployment is such a huge issue in EB5 because there is an estimated, and it's a whopping number, just listen to this, there is an estimated $15 billion invested into projects throughout the US, which can potentially be used for redeployment. And up until now, we've really not had any guidance, right, Rebecca?
Yeah, I agree. And what's so important, even more so, is that it's going to affect all the investors out there. So we want to make sure that we have, you know, we look out for our investors who have I-526 petitions pending or even I-829 petitions pending, because it's a lot of money out there, as you stated.
Well, it's not only the current investors, but prospective investors too. It's like everybody.
Well, Mona and Rebecca, you mentioned that it's an estimated $15 billion, and that's a billion with a capital B, invested in projects all over the U.S., and this redeployment of capital could affect that. So let me be the person to ask, what is redeployment of capital?
We have brought it up on previous podcasts, Mark, not for a while, because we really were waiting for something to really discuss about it. But redeployment of capital involves the reinvestment of capital following the repayment from the original EB-5 funds. There are some circumstances that which have to be completed before you can redeploy capital. Those are the circumstances that, first of all, your original capital has to be invested as per your business plan.
Well, Mona, there are certain requirements that are needed before we can redeploy, correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's not just that, oh, I can redeploy my capital now and I can make money over and over again, because that's often what we have been discussing, that redeployment, is it fair? Is it not fair? And we can talk about that in a few minutes. But the conditions, the conditions are as follows. The original purpose of the capital must have been achieved, meaning whatever was written in your business plan has to have happened. If your money was to be invested in the construction of an apartment building, for example, that has to have happened. The original jobs must have been created. And then the original capital has to have been repaid. In the absence of these three steps, the capital is not considered to be eligible for redeployment. But let's fast forward to today.
Well, Mona, what examples could we show for our listeners out there of when could redeployment happen? Like what kind of project or what would happen if for instance, let's say a senior living assistant project?
Yeah, that's a good example of senior assisted living, because we've seen quite a few of these. Mm-hmm. It can be any project. There isn't a project that you can use it or you can't use it. But we see redeployment mostly in construction, because mm-hmm. that finishes. When we have a business type project, you tend not to see redeployment because the money ends up being redeployed within the business anyway. It's more when you have a real estate project. It could be a mm-hmm. hotel development. It could be apartments. It could be, as you suggested, senior assisted living. And we do have examples of clients who have put together a senior assisted living and come up with a wonderful offer halfway through the EB5 term. And they can't leave that offer because it's such a good offer to sell. And so they sell the project. And mm-hmm. this has been happening with EB5 for a long time, as you know. So just to give our listeners a little background, back in June, on June 14th, 2017, remember that date pretty well, there was a new policy manual which was brought out by USCIS, and USCIS had for the first time stated that capital redeployment was mandatory. Now, I know we jumped up and down at that point, and that's when I think, Mark, we have a podcast going back to that time mm-hmm. where we discuss, we have to look back because we've been doing these podcasts for so many years.
4 years.
And so. It was so long ago.
Yeah, but we definitely have something because we were all outraged that, oh, why is USCIS making it mandatory to keep the money at risk? And I think I understand to a point because you can have a repayment so quickly. Maybe you have a repayment within 2 years or 3 years, and mm-hmm. they want to make sure that the money does remain at risk. But it doesn't seem fair given today's circumstances with the backlog and stuff. But these are all pointers we can bring out later. Right now, I think we should fast forward to where we are today, July 24th of 2020. Mm-hmm. Clarifications were sent out 3 years late. And there's a ton of things that we can talk about, that we need to talk about these clarifications, because I think we need more clarifications for these clarifications. Yeah. And then we want to know if these clarifications were brought out in the middle of COVID to help a COVID-ridden economy, which is what USCIS should be thinking about.
Yeah. So I'm going to take it from the top, Mona. Let's delve into what did these guidelines come out with? And I think one of the most important lines that I've noticed with the guidelines coming out on July 24th was that USCIS stated that a new commercial enterprise, or the NCE, may actually deploy capital directly or through any financial instrument, which is important.
Oh, the financial instrument. Mark, yes. This is an issue. Okay, there are so many blog pieces, but there's no consistency on this particular topic. And we wanted to take a few minutes. So I'm going to step back and I'm going to let Rebecca and Christina handle this section. And perhaps you could also explain where we think there is some confusion out there in the market.
Yeah. So as Mona said, contrary to everyone else's beliefs or what we think, is that we thought that USCIS actually had broadened the scope by adding the term financial instrument, where in the old guideline back in 2017, they actually gave a specific example, which they had mentioned municipal bonds, let's say for infrastructure spending. So before I even go into further, as Mona mentioned, we have Christine Delbonne, an attorney with our firm, who I'm going to ask, Christina, if you can let us know what actually is a financial instrument.
Hi, Rebecca. Yeah, sure, of course. In case anyone's not familiar, financial instruments are really, it's a catch-all term to describe a transfer of capital in capital markets. And the most common forms of these instruments are things like stocks, bonds, shares, derivatives, such as futures or swaps. These are all types of financial instruments which can be combined into asset classes. And you've probably come across one or two in your time, I would think. So,
oh, yes, definitely doing this. And what was interesting is that we saw that the policy memo did not define financial instruments, but we wanted to bring it out for everyone. And what we've seen is that a lot of EB-5 practitioners have alluded to the fact that USCIS have reversed this policy on municipal bonds, but Christina, how can we include bonds in this new regulation?
Sure. So the original regulation specifically stated new issue municipal bonds, and everyone seems to be upset because they've now eliminated that term as an example for redeployment. However, what they've included is that they are actually more so accepting of financial instruments in primary markets.
Okay. Primary markets. So explain to us, what is a primary market versus, you know, we've heard it in the policy memo on secondary markets as well. What is the difference between the two?
Of course. So there's two main forms of capital markets. There's primary markets and secondary markets. Primary markets are where financial instruments are offered and purchased directly from the original source, usually referred to as the issuer. Whereas a secondary market is more so referred to as the stock market or the NASDAQ. And the difference there is that instead of purchasing these assets from an issuer, you're more so trading them back and forth between investors or individuals.
Mm-hmm. So what USCIS was trying to do, they were saying secondary market instruments were not qualifying because in this instance, they're only there for financial gain. So Mona, what we were discussing earlier is that USCIS is not looking for just a financial gain or a financial loss. There has to be more to it, such as economic activity.
Well, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering whether COVID did bring this out or whether they've had been mulling over this themselves for a long time. I know that there's at least one regional center which has been considering putting money into the secondary market just because it's safe. And in one respect, yes, we should be keeping the investors' money safe. But I suppose USCIS are considering that their purpose is not only to keep the at-risk requirements, but to create business activities for economic growth and job creation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, like you said, would be perfect for a post-COVID recovery. But what about, you know, is that fair to the investors?
My personal feeling, it's not. And I feel that there should be increased oversight over redeployment. You've heard me talk about this over and over again, and I will repeat it again. I think the business side of EB-5 should be handled by the Department of Commerce and not USCIS. I do not believe USCIS is equipped to understand all the different businesses, the industries, the nuances. Look how long it takes us when we were approached with a new business. We take so many days, weeks just to research. And when we listen to the clients and we have to go out and we have to find an expert who could explain the nuances many a time. I don't think USCIS have the time or the resources to be able to do even half of the research that we do when we have different businesses. Mm-hmm. I think the Department of Commerce is the area which should handle anything to do with the project side.
Yeah. And with, you know, the headache of, you know, having to inform the investors of what are you going to redeploy your funds into? And that's a whole new issue we can get into. But, you know, the investors already did what they were supposed to do, right? They've invested their capital. It was at risk. It was used to create this project. It created the 10 jobs. And here they are again, having to do the same thing.
And they may lose their money the second time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the second time, it all depends on the documents and maybe the project as to where the money is going to be deployed. But okay, before we go into the good and the bad and the ugly of redeployment, let's get back to some of these updated guidelines. So you guys, thank you so much, Christina. You really have explained the financial instruments very well.
Thank you.
So these are the guidelines which were brought out. Reasonable time. For once, finally, USCIS have told us when they want redeployment. And it's interesting because we've been telling everybody it's going to be reasonable anyway. And the reasonableness is usually a year, but they did define it as a year.
Yes, they actually put a number to it. But they are allowing for longer periods of time, for instance, if they review the totality of the circumstances, depending on the business you're going into or something with the new commercial enterprise. So you have that gap where you can, you know, take a little longer than 12 months, but you have to have a reason as to why you needed that time.
Yeah, this is a really interesting point because these guidelines have given USCIS a discretion. It's not just with reasonable time. It's also with the ability to change the scope of where you're redeploying. Initially, everybody considered that if your first project was, say, a hotel, then you had to redeploy your second or you had to redeploy the money to a second hotel type project.
So that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, you can redeploy anywhere and you can change the documents. They're allowing you to change the documents. So yes. I thought this was wonderful. I thought this was perfect again for a post-COVID-19 recovery. It allows a regional center to invest in, say, you know, a business that has some relation to one of the businesses which has gone down with COVID-19, for example. But again, let's see what USCIS makes of this, given their lack of understanding of the realities of business.
Yeah, I agree. It is good that they've included that you can amend your documents. So we just need to make sure that everyone out there is, you know, going through all your original documents to basically expand your scope into different activities and helping all these COVID-related projects that are, you know, going to see a downturn in the future.
Well, that's what we hope. Okay, another point they did add, which again may be hugely problematic, is they limited the geographical scope. What USCIS have stated in these guidelines is that the money has to be redeployed by the same regional center. Now, we ourselves have seen how one regional center has been redeploying in another regional center in a different part of the country. They're saying, no, it has to be the same geographical scope. That has huge potential problems, right, Rebecca?
Yeah. So we have, I mean, you and I have discussed this several times, you know, what if one, it's the same regional center, what if that regional center is terminated? And two, it has to be within the same NCE. What's happened if there's management problems within the NCE? And then three, the geographical scope is so limited. There's so many other projects out there that probably need the help or could use the funds for redeployment, but it has to be used within that in that geographical area.
Right, because so many regional centers applications which went through over the last 2-3 years, every time a person tried to expand the geographical scope, USCIS would come back and say, why? So there are many regional centers with limited geographical scope, with maybe only 3 counties, 5 counties or whatever. We do see that as an issue. Perhaps also they will allow this under their discretion. Yeah. But the big one, retroactivity.
Yes. well,
would you like to explain that, Rebecca?
So let's get into that. It was a huge problem back in 2017 because, again, we didn't know when it was coming in, how it was so ambiguous, and all of the
guidelines were ambiguous.
Yeah, and all the projects out there were kind of just going along with what they thought was right. We did see that, you know, although the guidelines came out on July 24th, there was no mention of when the effective date would be. And then on Monday, July 27th, on USCIS's website, they came out with a Q&A, a question and answer, without informing anyone.
But the big one, Rebecca, the area that everybody's talking about, retroactivity.
Yes. Well, before we get into that, Mona, I just wanted to note some other good news, though, is that USCIS did mention that you did not need to have the same job creating entity, the JCE. And even bigger news is that you don't have to keep it within the same targeted employment area. So if your project was in a TEA, you don't have to redeploy. It could be redeployed in any other area that's within the geographical scope of the regional center. So those are some good highlights there. But as you said, retroactivity, I think that's what's on everyone's mind.
Right, right. So the whole point about this, for our listeners who are not understanding what we're talking about, is that as the original rules came out June 14th, 2017, after that, and it's been 3 years since then, there have been a number of redeployments made. And there have been a number of redeployments made outside these rules. They've been made with different regional centers and different geographical locations and possibly different scopes. So the point is that all of these redeployments have been made for existing investors and are currently pending with USCIS. And we would have thought that if guidelines came out in July, 3 years later, they would not be retroactive back to 2017, but it seems that they are.
Yes. So what they have done is we thought that, you know, July 24th would be the actual effective date and would proceed with future applications. However, that's not the case. On July 27th, USCIS came out with a Q&A, question and answers, on their website, which was not in the guidelines and was not even brought out to us. Everyone, I think, was just kind of looking through USCIS's website to see what else was out there. And what they did mention, Mona, which was interesting, is that they said that the July 24th policy manual updated guidelines are retroactive, meaning they are going to these rules and guidelines are going to be effective to those I-526 petitions and I-829 petitions that are currently pending with USCIS.
Right. This is a big deal because if they're going to deny petitions, it is very, very unfair. USCIS have never confirmed many of these pointers that they have brought out now. They've never confirmed, for example, that redeployments need to occur within a geographic scope, within the geographic scope of the original center, nor have USCIS ever assigned a timeline for redeployment. Okay, some things are open to interpretation, but these issues have not been there before. And to suddenly say 3 years down the road that these are the new rules and, hey, guess what? We are going to make it all retroactive back 3 years ago is very unfair. We're looking at litigation here. I can see that for sure.
Yeah, and Mona, what's even more upsetting is that USCIS came out in the Q&A that I just mentioned, is that they're updating the guidelines that clarify these existing policies. And as you mentioned, were not, you know, they were limited, they were ambiguous, and they're just coming out and saying, oh, well, too bad, it's not affecting any of these petitions in any way. So I found that to be upsetting. And I think we are, like you mentioned, we are going to see a lot of litigation out there.
I hope not. I mean, already USCIS is in trouble with time and money, and they don't need more litigation. It seems silly. On a housekeeping rule, Rebecca, I know you and Christina work a lot on the compliance side, the 924 compliance side. Moving forward, do you have to put all of the redeployment details into the I-924 compliance documents?
So not right now, although in the Q&A that USCIS provided, as Rebecca mentioned, they do state that they routinely revise the I-924A form and they will accept information. So while it's not required right now, it does seem that USCIS is hinting that they may be adding that in the future.
Do you think, Christina, that one of the reasons they made this retroactive is because they really don't have any idea how much it has been redeployed without these guidelines?
It's certainly possible. I think USCIS likes to make sure that they are involved in every aspect of EB5, and they don't want the developers to get carried away. So it does seem that they're trying to exert their influence in every aspect.
Well, that's definitely a good thing. That's been one of my beefs about redeployment, that there's really no oversight and a developer can do, or has been able to do, almost anything, which has unfortunately led to some litigation also, current litigation, which is out there.
Well, we won't say any names, but yes, we are hearing about litigation against regional centers right now. And it's been contentious.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope it wasn't like last year where USCIS changed the forms, but changed it, you know, 2 days prior to the deadline. Christina, we know all too well how that happened. it was crazy. But also within the Q&A, and Mona, I think this is another topic for us to bring up on another podcast. There was an interesting question about a pending I-526 petition, or let's say the I-526 was approved, but you haven't received your conditional green card. What if my project isn't moving forward? What can we do to redeploy funds or make sure it goes into another project? I think that's a lot to discuss. And I think it's interesting for us to get on and have that for another discussion.
I think we are going to be discussing this a lot, because with all of the uproar and the hoo-ha, I don't think there's anybody actually who hasn't written on this topic. I'm sure we're going to hear from USCIS. If nothing else, maybe they'll come out and explain the financial instruments issue.
That's something for us all to look forward to.
Yeah, well, you know what? We had a stakeholders meeting earlier this year. They said there's one more to come out this year. I really hope this brings it out.
Yeah.
So let's look forward to that.
That's something for us all to look forward to. You know, this really is an interesting and important area, and we certainly are going to hear a lot more about it, especially given this current adverse economic conditions we all find ourselves in. You know, Powell, the Federal Reserve chairman, just yesterday was talking about how bad the second quarter of 2020 has been, and that the coronavirus is certainly driving the economy. And Powell did say that there is a need for greater support from the Fed and Congress. And I hope that does happen, especially for EB5. In the meantime, these guidelines are helpful. You know, we know that there have been a number of written interpretations on these guidelines, but I hope this episode helps people explore and expand upon those guidelines and the interpretations of them even further. Well, Mona, Rebecca, and of course, Christina, thank you so much for updating us all here on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.